the rat-tat-tat of Tommy guns, the smashing of wine barrels, submarines stocked with liquor slipping underneath the watchful eyes of U.S. customs officials on the Detroit River. These are all scenes associated with Prohibition in America. From January 16, 1920, and for 13 years thereafter, it was illegal for nearly everyone to manufacture, transport, or sell alcohol in the United States. Where did this leave Jews, since wine is intimately tied into religious practices and ceremonies, such as weddings, the yearly Passover Seder, and the weekly blessings over Shabbat? There were two ways Jews were able to procure alcohol during Prohibition. Illegally, one group that had dealings with Al Capone was called the Purple Gang, a Jewish gang based out of Detroit, Michigan, and also legally. Article 3, Table 2, Regulation Number 60 of the Prohibition Law stated that both Catholic priests and Jewish rabbis could issue permits to their congregants to use wine for sacramental purposes, much in the same way doctors could prescribe alcohol for medical purposes. These prescriptions, or permits for wine, were commonly called exemptions because they exempted the Jewish congregant from aspects of the Prohibition Law so that they could purchase and use this wine for religious observance. Soon after the Prohibition Law was passed, the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the CCAR, the Organization of Reformed Jewish Rabbis in the United States, gathered to discuss this issue. As rabbis, they were concerned with Jewish ritual and making sure that it was observed in a proper way. And as Reformed Jews, they also wanted to be seen as Americans that respected the law, including those regarding Prohibition. In order to balance these two issues, the CCAR passed a resolution stating that according to the principles of Reformed Judaism and traditional Jewish law, it is permissible to use unfermented wine, commonly called grape juice, for all religious purposes. The conference held that Reformed Jews should not ask their rabbis for permission to buy and drink wine, and instead should use non-alcoholic beverages for religious purposes. However, at this time, the CCAR did not wish to go as far as to close the legal loophole which allowed Jews to buy wine, since the CCAR members recognized that large numbers of their Orthodox brethren fully believed that fermented wine is indispensable for the fulfillment of their religious obligations. For Reformed Jews, though, the CCAR said it was appropriate to use grape juice, apple juice, or to just say the blessings without any beverage. As one can well imagine, Americans, including non-Orthodox Jews, still wanted to access to wine and other intoxicating products, and were willing to bend the law to get it. 2 years later, in 1922, articles started to appear in newspapers all around the country with headlines such as, "Jewish rabbis reap fabulous sums of sums by flouting dry law." The CCAR saw itself as a very proper group of gentlemen and was worried about the reputation of Jews and especially rabbis in America if individuals claiming to be rabbis and real rabbis with poor morals were seen as willful exploiters of a loophole in this Prohibition law. An interesting letter from the CCAR records, housed in the American Jewish Archives, is dated the 2nd of January, 1922. It is written from the president of the CCAR, Edward Kalish, to members of the CCAR, to address this burgeoning emergency. The letter begins, "Dear colleague, from a number of sources, I have information that the violations and evasions of the National Prohibition Law are becoming more and more flagrant and numerous by so-called rabbis, some of whom are connected with congregations, while others are fakers pure and simple. Conditions have become so bad that scandals may break any day in one or more of the large cities to the shame of Israel." Rabbi Kalish openly states his fear that Israel, all Jews, will be seen as un-American lawbreakers. The letter continues, "You are well aware that fermented wines are not absolutely necessary for religious purposes. Decisions that unfermented wine meets all requirements have been given by authorities whose orthodoxy, sincerity, and scholarship cannot be questioned." This refers to the fact that a prominent rabbi, Rabbi Louis Ginsburg, had just published a 71-page paper of his own from an Orthodox Jewish legal perspective, saying that it was more important that Jews observe prohibition than use wine for religious purposes. The conservative movement decided to follow Rabbi Ginsburg's ruling and joined the Reform movement on this stance. Orthodox rabbis were split. A few lines down comes one of the most interesting parts of this letter, where Rabbi Kalish writes about this will to be at the same time American and in support of the general population of America, but also to defend the rights of other Jews, including the Orthodox who felt a religious obligation to use real wine. He continues, "In March, one rabbi urged the CCAR to petition the Congress of the United States to rescind that part of the law which grants rights to rabbis to issue permits for wine. The CCAR, out of regard for its Orthodox brethren and in order not to create a schism in Israel, did not go this far. Instead, it was agreed that all members of the CCAR would refuse to sign permits for the purchase of wine for sacramental purposes." Here Kalish shows this balancing act that the CCAR and the Reform movement as a whole were playing at this juncture in history, and many of us still work on today. How can we be identifiably American, not only observing the letter of the law, but also its spirit, and still be Jewish and supportive of other Jews? The rest of this section of the letter shows how the president of the CCAR feels the organization should act in this case. He says that Reform rabbis can still be legitimate Jews and legitimate Americans, but the CCAR must lobby to close this legal loophole which allows rabbis to issue permits for the sacramental use of wine. In the end, the CCAR followed the president's recommendation. The CCAR members decided that it was more important to be good Americans and to present a positive image to America than allow a few Orthodox Jews to legally buy wine, and many more non-Orthodox Jews, and possibly non-Jews, to utilize this legal loophole in order to avoid prohibition. The CCAR and the conservative movement ended up asking the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, the U.S. government official in charge of administering prohibition, to stop offering exemptions to rabbis. The commissioner responded by saying that he would look into the matter. History shows that the Prohibition Act was not modified and continued to allow rabbis to write exemptions, allowing congregants to purchase wine until prohibition was eventually repealed in December 1933. But rabbis had to reapply for a permit to distribute wine every year, and more thorough checks were put in place to make sure rabbis were legitimate and not just fakers looking to reap fabulous sums of money. Think now, how would you have answered this letter from the president of the CCAR? Do you think we have a Jewish responsibility to make sure that those few Orthodox Jews that felt they still needed to use wine for ritual purposes could still legally get this wine, even if it risks giving all other Jews a bad name? Or would you have tried to close this legal loophole in order to preserve the image of all Jews and all rabbis in America?